Welcome, friends, to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. We are here in person, and we also Zoom on Sundays. And Zoom has been we have been very grateful to have Zoom with the pandemic, but we have also made many new friends throughout the world, and especially throughout the country. And with Zoom, we just ask that people keep their microphones muted unless they are speaking, and to please direct their comments and questions to the chairperson. And if you do have to move around, get up, or do whatever, please stop your video, because that can be very distracting to people. If you do come into Theosophy Hall on Sundays or Wednesdays, we ask that you refrain from any kind of fragrances such as a cologne, perfume, scented soaps, that sort of thing. We do have people who are sensitive. And the ULT Zoom does follow the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists, which one can hear anywhere in the world at a ULT lodge. So we will now have that read. Thank you.
The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Now, to carry out the principles of this declaration, the ULT here in Philadelphia conducts meetings each week, three times a week, specifically on the teachings of theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. On Sunday mornings, such as now, it starts promptly at 11 a.m., both here in Philadelphia at Theosophy Hall and on Zoom. Each Sunday morning meeting is an hour long from 11 to 12, and it's rather a formal presentation in the form of a panel, such as we have today, or in the form of a lecture, always leaving plenty of time for discussion, questions, and contributions from everyone who's involved with the meeting. For the month of February, these Sunday meetings fall under the umbrella theme of the care of the soul. And today's topic is the healing power of meditation. On Wednesdays, we also have meetings, and those meetings are from 7:45 to, from 7:30 to 8:45, also carried on here at the lodge and on Zoom. And these meetings are, we follow The Ocean of Theosophy, which is a book, a broad scenario of a book. It's kind of actually a digest of the secret doctrine, where we learn the principles and discuss them and investigate them. So that also is conducted in such a way that the ideas are presented as a summary of each part of a chapter for a few minutes, and then there's questions and discussion on the topics of that particular chapter. And it can go a little more broadly than that, but we follow a particular path along the way. Then, of course, on Fridays, we also have a Zoom meeting only, which we call a round table. It's kind of a round table discussion. And we will, during the week, everyone's encouraged to read a particular article, a theosophical article, and then that article becomes the basis for the conversation, for the discussion of the theosophical roundtable. And this week, we're actually in the middle of what's known as Studies in the Voice of the Silence. And that can be found online, and you will receive an email regarding that. So you can find it in the email. We're in the second part of it this week. So that being said, the lodge is sustained entirely by voluntary contributions of time, money, and effort. All of the meetings are always free. No one you ever see at Theosophy Hall, you will find, who is a student of the philosophy, is paid a penny to do anything of this. The doors are always open to all people. It's not some kind of an exclusive club. And we do not have a monthly pay for membership situation. That being said, all contributions are certainly gratefully received, but by all means, there's nothing implied and no obligation imposed. Everyone is welcome to attend these meetings, whether online or at the Theosophy Hall. So, once again, the title for today's meeting is The Healing Power of Meditation, and we will carry it on as a panel discussion. The first part is geared toward the theosophical views on meditation, and then that will be followed by how these ideas can be applied for healing and help by an individual. Now, we here at the ULT, and by ULT we mean the United Lodge of Theosophists. We have a few new people here in Theosophy Hall today. We do not teach how to meditate, and there's a couple of reasons for that. The first reason is because the purpose of the time that we spend here in the lodge, which is just a couple hours a week, the purpose for this time is to study and to discuss the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy, with the hope that people will take this knowledge and apply it in their lives as they see fit, individually, without some kind of directive authority by anyone. But when we come here, it's a broad discussion of the principles of the philosophy. So that's the first purpose, the first reason why we don't actually teach how to meditate. The second is because really it's up to the individual to take these ideas and to do the work. There's no one here in the lodge or anywhere in the world of ULT who's going to claim that they're a teacher, that they're some kind of an authoritative spiritual leader. Everybody's a student, and everyone is invited to take the philosophy and apply it as they understand it according to self-induced means and self-devised efforts. So theosophy, now some people won't do that, and you don't have to take this and meditate. Everybody's welcome. But theosophy is for those, this is a statement that we've heard from the masters. Theosophy is for those who want it and who are willing to do the work. It's not for everyone, but for those who in this life, essentially, who are receiving the baton from themselves from a previous life, to take up the work again and continue forward with it. This is implied in the declaration of the ULT, which we just read, where it says, where the student, you know, a student is invited to the lodge who is willing to do the work, to fit themselves by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. So to do the work by study and otherwise, this a lot falls into the otherwise, and you follow your own conscience, your own decisions. Then also that phrase, to be the better, to help and teach others, that's along the line, teach as a verb, more so as a sharing of ideas or by setting example, not with some kind of authoritative, as an authoritative teacher at all. Okay, so then what does theosophy teach about meditation? If we were to take up that study. Well, first, actually, HPB's teachers told her that theosophy should not represent, theosophical meanings, should not represent merely a collection of moral verities, just a bundle of metaphysical ethics epitomized in theoretical dissertations. It must be taken by the students and made practical. And so while they're saying that to her, we can take that and accept that it's being said to us. It must be made practical. As regards the ULT, in regards to the ULT then, the authority actually is one's own inner nature. The authority is one's own conscience. And the authority also, we would say, is in the teachings themselves and our ability to recognize the truth in the teachings and to be able to apply it in our own lives. So, okay, but what about the practice of meditation itself? Theosophy undeniably does promote and recommend meditation. There are guidance and suggestions which are found by a sincere individual's search for them. Needless to say, you're not going to find a theosophical pamphlet that gives a practical step, number one, do this, number two, do that, on how you are supposed to inwardly think. There's no pamphlet you'll find here that tells anyone how to inwardly imagine these high ideals or high truths. And this is simply because we have to find it for ourselves through trial and effort. Real and lasting progress can only be made when practical steps are taken, and those steps will arise naturally from within the individual who is sincerely learning, teaching themselves how to meditate. And so when we hear about, we might hear about meditation, we might talk about meditation here, we might read theosophical books about meditation, but that's not learning meditation. Learning meditation is actually doing. So another consideration is that while all of us are, we are one universal brotherhood, the basis for the theosophical philosophy is that we all are of one essence, all of us are in our core, and that's the basis of universal brotherhood. Still, however, each one of us is a sevenfold individual, and which constitutes our physical body, our mental body, our emotional nature, our vital nature. There's all kinds of things going on in there, and no two of us are alike. So the process of meditation, if it's to bring into priority, to bring values into priority, to gain physical, emotional, and mental health, who's to know what's necessary for the inner life of another individual other than him, himself, making the effort and learning along the way? So the student is entirely free to engage in whatever form of meditation they choose, as we discover that that which is, we find helpful along the way. Now, there are certain, however, there are certain issues that we are warned against. And this is rather straightforward. When attempting to meditate, when learning to meditate, it is important not to feed or strengthen or gratify the personal selfish desires for things of this world. Now, there are books that are written that teach how to meditate and you do the whole magnetic thing to bring money to you. That's not what theosophy is about. That's the opposite of the purpose of spiritual growth and meditation that theosophy teaches. Also, meditations which aim at helping one to enter other planes or dimensions, or to engage in astral travel or things like this, this is dangerous. In fact, these other dimensions, we already are in our metaphysical nature, and we go through them every single night. We go through them. However, to try to create the conditions, to try to manipulate things, to start to dabble in that, we are definitely warned against that. In our development, for everyone, the time will come when it is definitely possible to do so, because for whatever the right reasons may be. But we are warned not to try to develop that before our time is right. So there's plenty in the theosophical literature that contain useful, practical guidance itself. When one looks for theosophical literature, we have to be careful of what's on the internet. There's a lot of things on the internet that say theosophy that is literally fake theosophy. So, and in particular, well, there's no need to get into all of it, but we would just advise the student to be sure that what you're reading is the original teachings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge, which is the philosophy of theosophy, as opposed to a lot of other new age psychic kind of things, which can take us off in different directions. It is said that everything that we read in the philosophy, which are related to meditation, written by HPB and Mr. Judge, they are reliably in line with the authentic teachers, with the authentic teachings of the teachers of HPB. And one who draws their cue from theosophical teachings on meditation will find that it is a pure, safe, harmless, noble, spiritually edifying practice that anyone and everyone is invited to pursue. This kind of practice may not be too exciting for our lower nature looking for bells and whistles, but if one is trying to fulfill the purpose of meditation, one will learn how to do so by finding it in the teachings of theosophy. So this is a little overview of meditation. One practical example for some of us who may not be too familiar with meditation and wonder, really, does it really help? There is a Harvard study that was done recently. Where subjects were taken, people who had never meditated in their lives. And they were given MRIs and they agreed to meditate every day for 8 weeks. On average, they meditated 27 minutes per day. And what was found is that after 8 weeks, there were actually structural changes within their brain, even though they had no history of meditating. It was observed that there was a thickening of the cerebral cortex, which is in areas associated with attention and emotional integration by meditating. And this has documented, these are documented differences that are actually proved by meditation. Also, meditation stimulates a major, and they said it in the Harvard article, it stimulates a major increase in gray matter density in the hippocampus, which is the part of the brain associated with self-awareness, compassion, and introspection. And then finally, there was also measured a reduction in stress that was correlated with the decrease in the gray matter density in the amygdala, which is known to play an important role in anxiety and stress. And so the conclusion was, by practicing meditation, we actively change the brain and increase our well-being and quality of life. So with that, we're going to turn this over to our other person in the panel for the healing power of meditation. I don't think I can pull it any further.
No. Okay. Can everybody on Zoom hear me? Okay. So the healing power of meditation, it is part of the, as was said, the overall umbrella topic of the care of the soul. So when we look at the care of the soul, people might say, what kind of care does the soul need? So we will find out over the course of this month how to go about doing that and why the soul needs this care. And there are ideas as to why the soul needs care. And we will look at that in this talk, because the soul has, when we look at mind, which is part of what is known as the soul, this mind is dual. There is a higher, more spiritual aspect and a lower, more, and this lower nature is more attached to what we call passions and desires. So the whole idea with meditation then, when we're looking at the idea of the care of the soul, is that we're trying to raise that lower nature to a higher spiritual level. And we're looking, as was said, a communion with the divine within, which is incessantly striving for the ideal. So the divine within is that higher nature, is the soul. So by trying to raise up that lower mind to a more divine idea, then we are caring for the soul. And it is on this basis of the spiritual aspect of our nature that we can practice meditation. And no concentration is possible unless the nature of the higher self is understood. And the lower can be focused on the higher. And in that way, we can pull it up to a more spiritual level. And in the Voice of the Silence, there's a phrase that we use frequently in meetings: to raise the self by the self. And this, raising the self of the lower nature to the higher self. And one of the interesting things is with meditation is that it is important to do it at a fixed time every day. And as was said, we in the first talk, that we do it based on our own needs. But it is considered to be whenever and whatever we are doing, to be focused. And by being focused, that way we are not distracted. And focusing on one thing, it is very tempting, especially when we're doing mundane activities, to, you know, maybe do two, especially in the kitchen, if we're cooking and it's on the stove and we're waiting for the water to boil, then we can do the dishes. And then when we're doing the dishes, we can do something else. We can prepare some more food. But even though we can do that multitasking, it is important to try and stay focused, keep our minds on one thing. And one thing that we hear is that, especially preparing food, we can look at, if we're making a salad, we can look at, well, this person picked this in the field. This, somebody else planted the seeds. And after it was picked by somebody, then it was loaded on a truck and the truck driver brought it to the store. And then the people in the store put it out, and then there's the cashier. So there are so many different levels of just keeping focused on one thing. And by doing that, we are focusing on the inner nature. We're looking at the care of the soul. And by concentrating on one thing, our minds are one-pointed. And as was said, we really need to keep our minds active. And with meditating, we don't want to like blank our mind out. By focusing on something higher. And Mr. Crosby has a quote on about meditating. He goes, "In the way of meditation, don't get passive. Danger lies that way. Be active in all things. The giddiness will pass away in time. The change with all its disturbances, mental and otherwise, has doubtless acted upon the nerve currents and circulatory system." And we just heard about this in that Harvard study about how the changes of meditation can impact our brains. The way to overcome disturbance, of course, is by mental and physical calmness. This should be maintained. And this is from his Friendly Philosopher, and it was on page 21. So when we're looking at healing then of the soul, and we can look at meditation as healing not only our minds, but also our physical form. And it is said that concentrating on a single thought does gain wisdom. Self-examination leads to a knowledge of the self, leads to a knowledge of the soul. And by doing this, we can destroy or at least elevate the personal self. Again, focus of the mind. And this is very important about being able to focus and concentrate on one thing. The inner man will be turned towards one direction, resulting in perfect focus. And because of this, being able to focus and not being distracted in all different ways, meditation then is suggested for health because it decreases anxiety then, it decreases stress, and we are raising our minds up to a more spiritual level. And there's that idea that is interesting. It's called a lifetime's meditation. And this is a high aspect of how we can live our lives. Compassion, love, understanding, helping others. In the declaration, the Theosophical Declaration that was read, we talk about to teach, to help and teach others by learning the philosophy, and also understanding that we are all one, that we are all connected to the deific principle. Not only are we connected, but we are a portion of that, a spark of that deific essence. And since we are all sparks, that is the basis for the theosophical idea of universal brotherhood. So by realizing we are all spiritual beings, that is another healing method. And by being one-pointed, it is a way that we can overcome mental obstacles. Mr. Judge says that we should look at trials as being opportunities and not just obstacles. And by being focused and decreasing our stress, we can look at those ideas. And of course, meditation is, many physicians, medical practitioners suggest people who are highly stressed, maybe their blood pressures are high, they have ulcers, anxiety, whatever, that by meditating and being focused, there, as was said in that Harvard study, one's blood pressure can be measured as being lower. Maybe there'll be a healing with the ulcer. People have better sleep, improved cardiovascular function, improved immunity, because it has been proven that stress with the adrenal glands that sit on top of the kidneys, that when somebody is under continuous stress, adrenaline is continually pumped. And that is a definite factor in high blood pressure and stress. And it gives us the ability to stay centered in the midst of any turmoil that is going on around us. And meditation develops a path through which the spiritual principle, the real man, can impress the lower personality. It is the uplifting of the soul towards the divine source, and it affects our will to perform, our will to do, our will to love. And by doing this, it is said that no matter what our thoughts and feelings are, we impress the astral with it. And if they're continually being lower thoughts and feelings, then the astral that surrounds us, surrounds the world, will be full of more negativity. But if we are able to affect a change in our thinking by meditation, then the astral can be impressed with more positive vibrations. So it is also said in The Voice of the Silence, the mind is the great slayer of the real. Let the disciple slay the slayer. So when we speak of the real, we are looking at spiritual nature. And the great slayer of that real can be the higher mind. And by doing that, then all these positive healing effects that were just mentioned will have the chance to work. Meditation can also help us to change bad habits and learn process and learn patience in this process. And it will only lead to positive results. And focusing on improving the mind will also have physical results. So relief, peace, well-being, joy, and better relations with others will be possible if we practice mindfulness, if we practice one-pointedness, concentration, and meditation. So we'll end with a quote from Mr. Judge, and it's in Letters That Have Helped Me, page 21. Meditation is the bridge, method or vehicle by means of which the student consciously and at will passes into a chosen state or condition, there sees and acts consciously and at will, and at will consciously returns. Meditation is never from below upwards, nor from without inwards. It begins and ends with the operation of the spiritual will, of which meditation is an instrument. So we will take any questions, comments that you may have. Yes.
What was the meditation offered to the Harvard study? You know, did they give them a simple meditation and everybody in that study followed it? Or did they say to these participants, you can find your own meditation and we'll then, you know, continue with the study?
Good question. So the question was particular about that Harvard study, and we have it in front of us, an article about it. And it doesn't go into the particular instructions that the students were told.
Right.
The emphasis was it was people who've never meditated before. This was the result when they tried. That's all we could say.
Okay.
SL?
When we start to meditate, we notice that there's this constant movement of thought and feeling, very personal. And then we also observe that as persons, we're very concerned about it. We like or dislike. And then there's a part of us which is watching all this going on, is watching the movement, is watching our personality react and not. What is that part of our nature who is the observer, the witness, the experiencer of all that constant change going on?
So the question has to do with, in the process of meditation, there's things going on with our mind, which very definitely, early on in the process, we may see it as this is what we're doing, this is what I'm doing, this is what I'm thinking. And perhaps an example of that is as we decide to try to focus on something, our mind is integrally related to our imagination and memory. And so when we strike a chord in our mind, that can just open the doors for all sorts of distractions from memory. And so part of the process of meditation is to gain control of that and to calm things down. Well, who gains control of it? It's not the mind, so to speak, or that aspect of the mind, but rather there's this word, it's called Ishwara. And that word we'll find from time to time in the philosophy which translates from Sanskrit as essentially the great spirit of all, which is individualized in the human being. And that is the spirit in the human being, which is taken on the physical form as its temple. So the question is Ishwara in control, or are my personal desires, my animal nature, is he running the show? Because he doesn't have to do anything that Ishwara tells him to do. He doesn't have to. He may eventually find that he's miserable and he may finally change things. But this Ishwara is that aspect of every human being that can, even in the world, stand back, observe what's going on, watch him or herself even participate in what's going on as a third party. And when we do, chances are Ishwara's decisions on how to respond to situations are a little bit different than if we were ignoring that aspect of ourselves and just dealing with the outside world in a reactionary way. Okay, so that part of ourselves, so forget the word Ishwara, it's we can call it perceiver, the inner man, we can call it the observer, things like that. It's he who resides in the body. And could we ask someone to turn off their video? Okay, let it go. So any other, now there was another, go ahead, please.
And also, it is suggested for us that if our minds do kind of just go off, which especially when we first try to sit and quiet our minds, we have to consciously pull it back. And one thing that might make things easier is to try and focus on some kind of higher spiritual ideal. And whatever that means to each individual. Because if we do have something to concentrate on, it makes the focus, it makes meditating easier. And, we can't tell you what that is, but if it's a higher spiritual thought and you can focus on it, meditation can come easier. And you had your hand up here in Theosophy Hall?
Not yet, but I plan to.
Okay. in the back here, yes? Your hand was up?
Ishwara is, it's an interesting, of course, it's a Sanskrit word. It's the self of all. We're each an individualized ray of the all. So we're separate but equal. It's sexless. It's, there is spirit has no sex. We talk about the higher mind, manas. The word man comes from manas, but it's sexless. We are we're all red. And that's the basis of universal brotherhood, which of course is sexless again. It's the limitations of language that uses gender,
mm-hmm.
But it's all, we're all one. And trying to connect with that through meditation and contemplation, whether it be our daily meditation, we can also meditate before we go to bed, which has been advised, and to do a review of the day, to kind of do a meditation on what we did, how we did it, and how we can do better. So, ULT doesn't have group meditations, but there are certain guidelines for sure.
Thank you. And so then, just to bring it back, Ishwara is that which is the observer, and getting in contact with Ishwara is creating the conditions through which Ishwara can operate through us. Was there another hand in the? Yeah. Oh, yes.
two questions. First question is, study what you talk about Harvard study, reference to the physical part of the human, which is brain, gray matter, and something like that. So correlation between mind and brain. As we all know, it's not the same. And physical like expansion or contraction or something like that in human body, how it's related to your condition in a mind side of that. Okay, so if you can answer that, it's your great. Sure. And second one, it's if you not provide any guideline for meditation, like you said, is that any milestone how you can find out that you're in the right path? Because you can spend a lifetime and be in the wrong path all the time, which is wrong path probably 300 different directions, and probably one. Okay, so in that case, you're doing something, you're wasting your time, not going anywhere. Do you have a like milestone? You're there, you're right.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll take the first. You can take the first. Sure. To start. So the first question is, apparently, if meditation is concomitant with the change in the structure of the brain, then there's a cause and effect relationship there, it seems. And in the Western world, in the decades gone by, along the lines of psychology, we're not personally a psychologist, but there has always been the hypothesis that we have a physical brain, it's the basis of who we are, and everything emanates from that, all sorts of feelings and thoughts and metaphysical things, it's the basis for that. And we create everything in our lives with our brains. Well, the teachings of theosophy is precisely the opposite of that. First is spirit. This is the plane of causes. Our brain, the structure and function of any particular brain is, while of course karmically we all have the same nature of what our brain is, but the structure is a function of how we think and how we feel. And this has also been shown using, we guess, MRIs or PET scans or something with the rehabilitation of drug addicts in literally, so to speak, rebuilding their brains based on self-image, how they feel, meditation, things like this. So if we want to change ourselves, it's not a matter of changing our brain to affect our outer life, but rather let's take the first step and change the way we think. And that can change our inner life as well. That'll change the way our inner life, the mind, and our outer life, the brain, interrelate with themselves, because ultimately the brain is the instrument that the mind uses so that the mind can function on this plane.
I was going to add that, but
and so, then the second part?
Yes. Yeah, so the milestones, how do we know? Well, if, again, that's totally personal, but one can tell if one is progressing by how well they're able to get rid of the distractions. We call it a monkey mind that keeps, or a hamster in a wheel keeps going and going and going. Well, as that hamster's slowing down, we can feel like, oh, maybe I'm finally getting it. And you may not necessarily get perfect meditation, if there is such a thing, in this lifetime. One has to develop patience with this and keep trying. And we know that, even if it's only a minute that we're able to focus on something, that's a minute more than what we were doing earlier. So the milestones are based, personally. It's like, oh, 5 minutes I meditated, I concentrated on one thing. But just keep trying. Just keep trying.
Meditation. As I hear from you about meditation, it's concentration in one thing and not allow your mind jump from one thing to another. How do you observe or recommend, like, guided meditation? But did you put your headphones and you guide it through the whole meditation for a certain amount of time from one point to
okay.
Is that meditation?
So the question is, when we talk about meditation, what is there benefit to guided meditation? Well, if as a student of the philosophy, we accept the premise that we are our own inner authority, then if we're turning over our meditative experience to the voice and word images of somebody that we don't even know, that probably won't be as productive and fulfill the purpose of meditation as if we were to try to practice ourselves. So rather than say, like, of course, there's no authority here. You know, you do whatever you do. But the teachings tell us that we can pick certain things to imagine in our hearts and minds that will affect us inwardly. And one of those things, for instance, is imagine whatever your individual ideal is for the ideal human being. And is it a Buddha? Is it the Christ? Just hold that image as long as one can and identify with it and as it in the highest aspects that we understand. And that has an effect on our entire nature. Now that's just one. Another option would be, we have a couple of things like this. Okay, then there's this idea of meditation. You know, we want to make it as universal as possible, but not universal and abstract and vague so that we don't even know what we're meditating about. So if we pick something like meditating on the sun, and we could say on the physical sun because of all the correlations that it may have with the highest in the universe. But theosophy says get past that physical sun, because within or behind or beyond the physical sun is the spiritual sun, which is the source as all of all. So if we want to hold in our mind the image of a physical sun, but know that there is so much more behind it, which is the source of life, of light, of power, of will, of compassion and intuition, and recognize that because we accept the students of theosophy, one hypothesis, a teaching is as above, so below. As we look at that in our meditation and accept it as truth, we're evolving it or stirring it within ourselves. And we can add to that our own words, thou art that, and that will open light within one's heart.
We have two questions here in Theosophy Hall and then two chats.
Okay, yes, the lady in the back.
It was just more of a something that I've experienced, I'm just sharing that, and it's based on some studies with an organization called HeartMath that, like this Harvard study, studies the physiology of what happens, and it's with the heart. So the heartbeat follows your breath. Some people are visual, so like thinking of a sun, or like you were saying, you know, thinking of Christ or Buddha or whatever it is, that might work for some people. Not everyone is the same. Some people are more like feeling people. So you can put your hand on your heart, and you can put your hand on your stomach or your solar plexus for that matter, where we have a lot of our emotions, and your focus can just be on your breath. It doesn't need to be a thing like a sun or an image of it could just be a feeling. You know, the feeling of gratitude and appreciation is what they studied with the heart anyway, of lowering, you know, blood pressure and stress, is that gratitude and appreciation were the strongest of those.
Thank you. So the contribution has to do with one individual's experience, where really focusing on the heart and the breath helps us to achieve this state of meditation. And if meditation is a focus on universal realities, we could even take the feeling of that breath as above, so below. Well, as below, so above. There are universal realities that have to do with the in-breathing and the out-breathing of the universe itself, mm-hmm. and how we participate in that, and we share in the responsibility for all of those cycles, just as we are responsible for ourselves here. So the idea of meditation, when we start from below above, is to accept it. We are a natural participant in the universe. And what is it that I'm experiencing in the here and now that has application to everyone everywhere? Thank you.
There was a question in the back.
Yes, in the back.
So as far as milestones go, we're advised to grow unconsciously like a flower does, and not to make, to unfold, and not to make pride and self-regard, you know, to watch out for pride and self-regard, because we can lose it all through thinking that there's spiritual pride, thinking that we know better than others. Look at these fools. Don't they get it? You know, so we always have to be on guard for that. We're all susceptible to that at some point in our development on the path.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we reach thickets here, and so to clear it out.
So the message here is, you know, along the way, so meditating is part of the work of the student of theosophy, no doubt about it. What levels we accomplish in our meditation is a completely different discussion. That's not, we don't set a goal to do that. We set a goal, so to speak, to be consistent in the work. In the declaration we read, that work and that end, or rather the work and the end is the work we have, all right. That work and that end. Hold on. What we're trying to say is the dissemination and the practice is what's important. That's the work. The results will come. The results will come just as surely as someone who doesn't otherwise know and sees an egg and it's an egg. It's always been an egg. It'll always be an egg. They have no idea what's going on inside of that egg. And so one day, boom, it happens. So just know that each one and all of us, in our own way, we are inside of an egg, and we'll know it when it happens, or we may not know it when it happens, but we may reflect in the future and see that it happened. So don't get caught up in that. Don't get caught up. That's the lower mind asking. Okay.
I can't. The print's too small.
Yeah. Okay.
From here.
Okay. So we'll talk. So the first contribution here is, there's a question: is meditation on mantras a positive or negative technique? Yes, JCS, please answer.
It depends on how we use it. If the mantra is just constantly repetitive, like a self-hypnotic passive tool where we're trying to blank out the mind, then yes, it's very detrimental and dangerous. If we use a particular phrase as an anchoring phrase, something that might calm us down at any moment during the course of the day, a trigger that is a phrase that's going to create mindfulness, self-awareness, critical thinking, and concentration of of a sense and thinking in universals, then it has a positive effect. And even the monkey mind might respond to it. If we meditate at fixed times, if we try mindfulness across the day, and we find out that our mind is flying around from one point to another, just the pause of being aware, oh, the mind went to that auxiliary thought. How is that like my seed thought or my mantra? What triggered? Where's the correspondences and the parallels? And in that active moment, we're self-aware at a whole different plane of being.
Thank you. Then we'll read the second that was put up a little while ago. And that is the mind the spirit, which is the true self, or is the mind just an aspect of the self?
We think that the mind is an aspect of the self, especially the higher aspect of the mind, not the lower, the higher aspect. And it's that higher that's trying to pull up. It's interesting because self, the word self, pretty much in theosophy has different connotations to it. And the whole idea of the mind, an aspect of the self, it would, we're having a hard time explaining.
Well, let's close it up.
Yeah,
we have to,
that's a whole nother class. sorry about that, but we do have to close. It was a very, you know, we had a lot of participation and we're, you know, we hope to see everybody on Wednesday. Thank you.
Do you have a Zoom meeting?